You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Recently, I was working on an essay for which I had to watch some of Chloe Zhao's movies. First, I watched Nomadland, which is now, you know, it's her third feature and is now up for 6 Academy Awards and all kinds of accolades. And I had never encountered her work and watched a screener of Nomadland maybe late in 2020. So last November, December, and didn't know that much about the movie going into it. Mm-hmm. And had to pause it 15 minutes into it. I was like, what the fuck is this movie? Like, who is this? Who made this? What's going on? You know, like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is unlike other movies that I've seen recently, other features, and which I think is true of Nomadland. And so I started going back through Zhao's catalog. I had heard of the writer and I wanted to sort of go back and see how she worked with the non-actors. And there was something about the way that translated on film. You can tell when the person on the screen isn't it's like, I think Frances McDormand is like one of the best actors in the world, but there is a difference between someone who understands that their job is there to act and to be there for the camera and someone who has no experience of being in front of the camera. And I was so mesmerized by that I went back and watched The Writer, which Zhao shot on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota entirely with members of the Sioux tribe. And I was just brokenhearted by this film.
Welcome to Open Form. I'm Michael Denzel Smith. Brady is a cowboy through and through, a rodeo star known throughout his Lakota Sioux community. But a devastating brain injury has sidelined him from the only life and passion he has known. It forces him to consider the value of his life beyond his commitment to cowboy up. This week's film is The Writer, and it was chosen by Jordan Kistner, author of the essay collection Thin Places, and host of another Lit Hub podcast you should be listening to, Thresholds.
Zhao and Jandro had met when Zhao was on the reservation shooting her first film, and she was, which is called Songs My Brother Taught Me. And she liked him. He taught her how to ride a horse and she liked him and was like, I want to make a movie with Brady, and couldn't figure out what to do. And then he had this catastrophic accident and she thought, oh, that's our movie. And so the film is about a wounded cowboy. Who can no longer be a cowboy in the way that he has been raised to believe that he not just like has to be socially, but like is spiritually in some way. And there's something about the non-stylized aspect of this film that really is blowing my mind. And there's something about the way that it tries to unpack masculinity and ideas about community and ideas about vulnerability and how we deal with being unable to fulfill the role that we thought we were supposed to fulfill and what we thought we were born to do. I can't stop thinking. It makes me cry. Yeah. I just loved it.
Yeah, I couldn't help throughout watching this film. Have you seen The Wrestler with Mickey?
Yeah.
Like, it felt like it was a very similar movie in that, like, the dealing with the both physical and psychological effects of being unable to do the thing that you feel called to do, which is a very physical thing. Obviously, in The Wrestler, it's about wrestling and, like, this guy that's been wrestling for decades, right? And and just like his body is giving out on him and he has to make a decision. But it's like you're saying, sort of core to his identity. It's like, it's spiritually like there feels like he would be empty without the act of wrestling. But the major difference here would be that like with the wrestler, it's at the end. And for Brady, it's like he was kind of just getting started, and here
20?
Yeah, he's like 20 years old. Yeah. And he's not fully formed as an adult, as someone who's like been in the world and seen it and felt it and understood it and like gotten a chance to be exposed to anything else. Like this is something that like it's a dream of his, and like yes, he's like successful at that point. But it's taken away from him at such a young age that it's like, how do you come back from that in terms of like just living a life?
Right. And we sort of see him after he's been told by his doctors that he really shouldn't, you know, really shouldn't, definitely shouldn't ride in rodeos and like probably shouldn't ride horses at all. And he's having ongoing these sort of seizures, and he's really supposed to move on and find another way to live. And part of what we see is that like, there actually aren't that many, there aren't that many other lives that are available to him to live. We see him like in his beautiful shirt with the, you know, and his hat, like he dresses up like a cowboy to go to the employment office. Yeah. And like, there's not that much else available for him in terms of alternate lives, not that he wants them at all. And so he winds up sort of bagging groceries, and you see these scenes of him. And he needs to bag groceries because he needs to help his father pay the rent on their house, right? Like they need the money. And the only thing he's ever been able to be paid to do is to train horses and ride in rodeos. And so he like, you see him sort of try in ways to figure out like, what else would my life look like? And it looks, those scenes of him at the grocery store are like devastating, even though we know as people who want him to be well and survive that like him moving on to a different way of life is a good thing for him. Like it's safe for him to be there bagging groceries, but like it is really conveyed how devastating it is for him to have to imagine that this would be his life as opposed to a life of training horses. And there aren't that, it sort of seems to him that those are the only kind of two ways.
Yeah.
That the life that he, the avenues for young men in the world described by the movie are, you know, there aren't that many avenues, and there's really only for him one that looks like a life that's going to be worthwhile.
Wow, that's amazing. A horse that never had nobody on his back before.
And then when he's working in the grocery store, I mean, there's two instances where he's recognized, right? Like people know him for this, and they're like,
a little kid asked for a picture with him. He's like a famous person. Yeah.
And it's like, and he's recognizing, at least in the beginning, that like, I can't do this anymore. It's not going to be a viable life for me. I got to make some money. I got to find something else to do. And like you say, he's working toward that, working toward whatever narrow fields that are available to him. He's like working toward that, but he's getting these reminders from people that like, no, there's another life that excites me, that like, that gets me going, that helps me wake up and like makes me feel fulfilled, and like also offers this outside validation, right? Like people enjoy watching me do this. Like I can have a sense of something bigger than myself and wrapped up in that. And so it's like the pull is always there, because it's like, what's going to be fulfilling to him aside from the paycheck and working in the grocery store? And like even with that, like how much is he actually going to be making in this low wage job, right? Like, and so it's just like the grandiosity of the dreams and like what's available to him what the possibility like still sits inside of him, and it's just like, and it's reinforced externally. So it's just like there, it doesn't seem like he really has a choice. Like he's got to get back to it.
Yeah, and we see a couple moments where he kind of disobeys doctor's orders and trains a horse, and you know, tries. We see these scenes of him breaking a horse that is difficult to break, or training a horse, which I also. I thought those scenes were so interesting because they were just, they were not staged. It was actually, she just like had him break a horse that, you know, nobody had ever ridden. And so there's something that's a little, that feels a little like live in its tension about those scenes. Cause we just don't know what's going to happen actually. And they didn't know. But so we see a couple scenes where he like disobeys doctor's orders and goes and trains a horse. And like someone will say to him, oh, I heard you had a special touch. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It's amazing to get to see you do this in real. Like we know, like you're saying, that like he has a reputation as a person with a gift.
Yeah.
Not just as a rodeo cowboy, but as a a person who understands how to work with horses and who feels called to work with horses.
Yeah.
And there's so much conversation in the film, mostly by the people around him, young men his own age, and you know, men of his father's generation, about like what I think was like the calling of the cowboy, like what a cowboy is, that they are all cowboys, and that's not just like a job. It's like a spiritual calling.
Yeah.
And it's a whole way of life, and it's a whole identity. And he's also contending with the fact that there's so much conversation and messaging that like cowboys ride through pain.
Yeah.
You know, like that the way his friend says to him, like, you don't let pain put you down. Like, that's not what cowboys do.
Makes no difference. It's like, it's all the same to a cowboy or something like that. Like, it's
like he's like, his friend is like, get back up on there. Yeah. Like, I broke some ribs once, right. And you told me to ride through it. And Brady tries to say, like, well, a head injury is a little different than ribs. And you're right. And the line he gets back is like, oh, it's all the same to a cowboy. And so there's this sense of like, it's not just, he's also having to contend with the fact that he's been told his whole life that there's no injury. Like if you can't, if you are physically capable of getting back on the horse, that's what you have to do.
Exactly.
Because that's what a cowboy does. And so in order to not do that, he has to fail at being the only thing he wants to be, which is such a, I don't know, like that story, it's similar to The Wrestler of like, how do you let go of this idea that you've been given your whole life about how to be, how to like enact a form of masculinity that feels really important to you and to your community. And what are the stakes of walking away from that or trying to manifest a different version of that?
To what you're saying about that messaging, like he reaches a point of, you know, where he's going to go back to the rodeo, right? And his dad's there and it's like, are you crazy? You're going to kill yourself. Like, you don't listen to anybody. You're stubborn. He's like, I have been listening, right? Like, this is exactly what you've told me all my life. Cowboy up, like cowboy, like possessing all of those traits that you're discussing there. Like the idea that there's something intrinsic to the cowboy that, is meant to overcome all of these other physical limitations of your personhood, right? Like that you can transcend that by adopting the ethos of the cowboy, or adopting the dress and all of those things and everything that comes along with the lifestyle. And it's like, but no, you really can't, right? Like you are only human. And so to imbue the cowboy with all of these senses of like, you know, almost this like, perfect masculinity, right? Like it is to say, like there is a toughness that one adopts and that like can be used throughout your life and every aspect of your life to overcome every obstacle. And it's simply to say, like, well, no, you already have, he already has an example in his life of that, right? That like this doesn't last forever, and this also can trample you and can be taken away from you with his friend who's Lance.
Lane.
Like, he goes to visit Lane, and like Lane is physically incapable of doing that because he had a similar accident, right? Like, he's been trampled by I think he was riding bulls. And it's like, you have an example here in your life that shows you their cowboy up just like isn't going to be sufficient. Just because you want it, it doesn't mean that you're going to always be able to perform it.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much about that. We really see the way that like this cowboy up ethos is about refusing any form of weakness or vulnerability or pain, right? Or like maybe not refusing pain, but refusing to let pain drive or determine anything for you. That like you, by sheer force of like will and grit and the hat and the masculinity, are just going to be able to kind of deny the reality of your fragility, the reality of your feelings, the reality of your pain, right? And like so much of what we see in the scenes with Lane, in Lane's kind of like inpatient physical therapy setting where he lives, and then in Brady's interactions with kind of his other cowboy friends, is this feeling that like this insistence that young men, that these young men manifest that wounds them. It damages them. They walk around with chronic pain because they are told that they are supposed to just get right back on the horse the minute that they can. That asking them to do this impossible thing wounds them and wounds them and wounds them. And at the same time asks them to pretend that they are not woundable. And the unsustainability of that feels like kind of the core drama of the film. And I love that you mentioned Lane, because Lane feels like this wild and very beautiful counterpoint, because Lane has been injured beyond being able to feign that he's going to be okay, right? Lane can no longer speak. Lane can no longer like walk on his own, right? Lane is injured beyond being able to even like simulate a return to a normal cowboy life, or even just like sort of a normal like living outside of an institution where he gets the help that he needs, right? Like there's no cowboying up past what Lane has experienced. And like you sort of see, and I kind of feel like because of that, the scenes between these two friends, and Lane was like supposed to have been the hotshot, right? Like the most talented, the star.
He's like in the videos, like, he's doing all the flexing and like.
Yeah, and like they're talking about how he always used to like, you know, get all the girls and be kind of you know, like that he was really like the ultimate young, you know, the ultimate young kind of swaggering hotshot cowboy. And that this was robbed from him like in this very tragic way, because he was sort of manifesting it the best of all of them. And then he's sort of been injured in such a way that he'll never really be able to ride a horse again. And that creates his injury and like the immutability of his injury creates this space in the film where actually like there is tenderness in the film around Lane, because Brady hugs Lane and Brady calls him brother and says, I love you. And like there's a scene where like they pray for Lane as a group of friends, and they say, we are him and he is us. Yes. We are one in this together. I wrote down that line because I thought it was so beautiful. Yeah. And like they play pretend, Brady and Lane play pretend, where like he like brings a saddle into the home or into the facility and sets it up and help and gets the aides to help set Lane up on the saddle. And they like play pretend together.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think something that like attracts me to this film is that it shows the fact that like it dramatizes kind of the brutality of trying to ask people to pretend like they're invulnerable. Mm. And it also shows the way that like terrible, irreparable fragility or vulnerability or injury opens a space like in the, where there otherwise would exist none to engage like with real, to like have nobody say, oh, just cowboy up. Yeah. Or like, oh, just ride through it. Like instead, these two young men are really meeting each other where they are, like where they actually are, not where they feel like they're supposed to pretend to be.
Yeah. God, I just ask you to take care of Gus on his travels, Lord. Just be with him all the time and protect him. Keep him safe, God. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
To me, for me, a lot of that tenderness is brought about because they're not actors and because this is their actual story that they are then reenacting. And you can see it in like sort of, I mean, you can feel that they're not actors, right? That they're yeah. delivering the lines in ways. But part of what like it then makes it so tender is because, and heartbreaking, as you say, like, is because you're witnessing these real people reenact the trauma, like they're reenacting it, and like, and all of the little parts of that too, right? Like the things that are, that it's not just the act of being stomped on by a horse, right? But it's like in the very opening scene where he has to like take off the bandage from his head, and it's just like, this is how it actually feels. This is what it actually looks like when he's smoking weed after some of these things. And it's like, no, this is how I actually cope with this. And it just feels so, it's heartbreaking because you're just witnessing him go through the, what feels like the exact motions and emotions of what this experience wrought for him in his own life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder, you saying that right now just made me think about like the ethics of wanting to watch a non-actor re-experience a traumatizing event.
Yeah.
Traumatizing event. Like, because this is not a documentary, right? Like this is a narrative feature film where everyone is playing sort of a version of themselves, but where some things have been changed. So like Lane, for example, is really... Brady Jandro's childhood best friend was really like an unbelievable hotshot at the rodeo. Only he was injured in a car accident. He actually wasn't injured in the rodeo. So like there are like things like that, or, you know, and it's scripted in a sense. There's like Zhao wrote the story of the film, some of which totally deviates from the real, from what really happened. And yet like, the core scenario did happen to this person, and like the core identity crisis, and the physical pain and the negotiation between, I mean, even like the scene where he has to shoot his horse, like that happened, and like watch, you know, like having to, and like, there's something that is, feels more powerful about a viewing experience because you're not watching someone pretend to live a life. You're watching someone in their life. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't know. Is that,
how do you view? Like, it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's fucked up as like a directorial project, or do you think that's fucked up as a spectating project?
I think, you know, because I would say as a spectator, just because it the film does have the full participation of all of these people, right? Like, and so they know what's going on and they know what the story is, and they've like accepted that, and they're fully there to do it. So it's not as if, like, and also then it, like, you know, we could call into question the ethics of you know, translating anyone's story in that way, like, and say that it's somewhat exploitative, because like if we're just taking that story and then transmuting it for an audience to consume, there's something exploitative in the very nature of that relationship, right? Because, and I feel like maybe it's less so with their full participation, but as a viewing audience, it does feel like I'm getting too intimate with this person, like that feels like both heartbreaking and like I'm glad you're telling this story, but also wishing that especially Brady had a little more distance from it so that he didn't have to relive it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the word that sticks out to me in what you just said is the word consumption. Like when it feels like a thing that I'm consuming for like whatever pleasure or edification. When I think about like this story, this family story, this young man's story, this community story, as like something that is being turned into a commodity for someone, for my, I don't know, pleasure or consumption or whatever, that's when I start to feel like really icky about it. Mm-hmm. And when I think about it as something that is being like conveyed in the way that sometimes we want art to convey some truth of the world or some truth of our human experience. And of course, all art that is sold is both of those things, yeah. Right? So we just like have to hold that intention. But I think you're right that the participation of their family, of this guy, of his friends, of the community in the film, knowing because Zhao had already made a film on their reservation before. So they knew how she worked and they knew what the films were like. That makes me feel a little bit more able to engage the intimacy that is sometimes uncomfortable of the film, feeling like it's not predatory intimacy, like it's invited intimacy.
D. O. N. I. B. E. D. Don't give up on your dreams.
And it's on the point about like you mentioned about like this film is in large part about community. I think it's a key difference between this and The Wrestler in that at the end of The Wrestler, like he's still wrestling and he like knows that his heart will give out and all of that. And he still chooses it. And Brady does give up the rodeo. And I think the key there is that in The Wrestler, like this character feels like he has no one, where Brady has a community that supports him that he can go back to. He has the family, like he has all of these things. He has people that care about him, that count on him. And it's like there's that pull there that he wants to give up on his life. Like you see it in the scene with his sister after they put his horse down. You know, he's like, it's not fair that you had to put the horse down and that just because I'm a human and I had an injury, like I get to live. He doesn't seem to want to live anymore. Like, right. So that's why he's going back to the rodeo, knowing that it would very well kill him. But he spots his dad and sister over there. And it's just like, no, I have something to live for that's outside of myself. And I think that community that's built, that the brotherhood with his friends and all of that, like, is something to then, I don't want to say that it's like an antidote to that the cowboy up ethos, because like obviously that still runs through the community itself, but it is something that like offers him an alternative to simply say like, no, I'm not in this by myself and I'm not cowboying up for myself. Like the idea here is that I'm always engaged with the community, that they are always there for me and I'm there for them.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is the crux of why I am so fascinated with this movie and like it so much. I've been thinking about this and writing about this a little bit, because I think that that thing, the thing where he decides not to sort of pursue the suicidal individual pursuit, mm-hmm. Makes this a very unusual and kind of exceptional Western, like cowboy mm-hmm. movie, because the cowboy movie tends to manifest this set of like binaries that some like mm-hmm. Film theorists of the Western were writing about in the mid-century, where it's like, you know, it comes back to this romantic, capital R romantic era of like the wilderness in heavy scare quotes versus civilization, also in heavy scare quotes. And that like the cowboy is like the wilderness is associated with the lone individual mm-hmm. with integrity, with a kind of brutality, right? And then there's civilization on the other side, and that like, and it's more feminine and it's more cultivated, and it's like, and it's all the constraints and the failures and the corruptions of civilization that the cowboy is often trying to get away from and into the integrity of his solitude, right? And that there's this tension between the cowboy as a lone ranger and the cowboy as like a person who comes from somewhere and has mm-hmm. people who love him mm-hmm. and who he presumably loves and to whom he owes something. And often cowboy movies are about like, they enact this drama of the individual, usually individual man, though not always, like needing to fulfill this idea of their kind of what they think a cowboy is supposed to be. And often that is about leaving or turning their back on community mm-hmm. so that they can continue mm-hmm. to sort of like hold to their integrity and like live, and manifest what they think a cowboy is supposed to do and supposed to be, which has a lot to do with, as we've been talking about, masculinity, denial of pain, denial of vulnerability, denial of need, right? Denial of like needing anything other than like your horse. There's usually a moment in these films where like the cowboy doesn't have to die. They could just ask for help, or they could just like be, you know, they don't need to go like hurtling off a cliff or whatever, or like running into the line of fire. They could just ask for help and they would get to live, and they don't, because that's like runs counter to the ethos. And I love that in this movie, like it culminates in this gesture of him basically, you know, saying he's going to go off and kill himself because he'd rather be a cowboy who kills himself than somebody who doesn't get to be a cowboy, or has to be a compromised cowboy in some way. Mm-hmm. And his dad asks him not to. And they have this, you know, they have this argument wherein he's sort of saying like, well, I'm just trying, you know, I was listening to everything you said. This is you. You told me to be like this. And then eventually, and he gets kind of like right up to the edge of doing this thing that will probably result in his death, his terrible death. And he just turns and he's like, sees his dad and his sister and says, and just, and walks away, you know, like he finds a different way to be, to find ongoingness, and it like hinges on him accepting that he is needed and that he needs, you know, that like his family needs, his sister needs him. They love him. They want him there. And like, he loves them and they're, so he's going to kind of, and it's a complicated family. It's a complicated community. It's not always like one where he feels like totally held, maybe in all the ways he wants to be held. But like in that community, he can be a person who is a cowboy, who is also injured, you know, and also vulnerable, and also gets to live, and gets to sort of like keep finding out what it means for him to live. It's not like he just gets to go back to the life that's exactly what he wanted. He has probably like, you know, years of compromise, you know, of compromised physical health in front of him. But like, he gets to sort of, he and Lane get to keep, you know, being these different kinds of, you know, these different kinds of cowboys, even though they don't get to do it in the way that they thought was like the script.
J, Jordan, what's one lasting image that sticks with you from The Rider?
The scene, the image, this happens in a couple different scenes where Brady and Lane kind of play this game of pretend, where they sort of pretend that Lane is back on a horse, and Brady will give Lane his hands or sometimes reins, but often, like at least once, it's just they just hold hands, and he sort of talks Lane through, you know, he's like, okay, pull the horse around left, and he'll like tug his hand and pull the horse around right. And it's sort of like physical therapy because it's good for Lane to practice, you know, like the kind of motor coordination, but it's also like a way for them to connect still over this thing that they both love that they can't have in the way that they want. And it's a way for them to touch each other and it's a way for them to be, I don't know, the act of these two young men playing pretend riding horses and the gentleness of that and the humanity of that, like just these two people kind of meeting each other in these really compromised places and being kind to each other and sort of like holding each other's hands and pretending to be on a horse because they both love to be on a horse is something that I really keep thinking about with regards to that movie.
Jordan, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thanks for listening to Open Forum, a podcast from Lit Hub Radio, produced by Justin Alvarez and hosted by me, Michael Denzel Smith. Feel free to like, comment, and subscribe to Open Forum wherever you get your podcasts, and or sign up for the Lit Hub newsletter to stay up to date on our latest episodes. Next week, the afterlife is a complicated bureaucracy, but say his name three times and he'll help you sort it all out for a price.